Hello and welcome to Cage Club, two fans, almost 100 movies, 100 episodes.
Ooh.
This is episode 100, Running with the Devil from 2019. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm the podcaster.
Ooh, we should have done that. And this is Cage Club Prime, episode 100. I guess in total, episode 150. I guess awards are one more.
You know.
So, I don't know. There's a bunch of these. But we are doing this not intentionally because it's episode 100, but we're in person, which is sort of a rarity. Although I feel like now when there's only a few, we should probably do these in person as often as we can to celebrate.
Yeah, we're at the second movie of the year for Cage, and it's September. So, like, we are squeezing them in here at the end of the year.
Well, you know, I wrote about on the episode write-up for this episode that we've been celebrating the year of Keanu, but this is the autumn of Cage.
That's right. Cage owns the fall.
He owns the fall. I was going to call it the fall of Cage, but I don't want to have, like, wordplay. Like, get your snark out of here.
Yeah.
But here we are, episode 100, Running with the Devil, a movie that is apparently in theaters somewhere and also on VOD. I think also on Apple TV. Right. Here's what this movie is about.
Oh, plot synopses.
No David Lee Roth, sadly. No Van Halen at all. No Running with the Devil.
Oh, no, Okay, I didn't even pick up on that.
So this is a movie in which no character has a name.
Right.
Everyone is just a pseudonym.
Yes.
It's a movie in which there are far too many credible actors who I don't know why they're in this.
Yeah.
It's Cage and Lawrence Fishburne and Clifton Collins
and Leslie Bibb. And it's just, what is
and
going on?
All these different actors.
Barry Pepper might deserve to be here, but that's
Barry Pepper. But there's a lot of people. Oh, there's Peter Facinelli from Can't Hardly Wait and also from Nurse Jackie.
Oh,
like, there's a lot of people that I'm like, I recognize six or seven of these people. Lawrence Fishburne going full Cage, and we will talk about that.
God. Super Fish.
But this is a movie in which Cage is a, I guess, mid-level to upper-level drug dealer, drug kingpin, lord of some kind, the underworld. There has been basically a couple flaws or weaknesses in the drug pipeline.
Yes.
And so Barry Pepper, who is the lord, the king, Don of this family, dispatches Cage and another person who is never even given a character name, as
far as
I know.
But played by Cole Hauser.
So, but like, he doesn't have like a pseudonym, right? It's just like,
but you know, him and Adam Goldberg are in this movie.
Adam Goldberg is great
as the snitch, I think.
The snitch,
and
yes.
They're both in Dazed and Confused.
So.
Wasn't Cole Hauser also a certain villain in a certain Fast and Furious movie? If I'm not mistaken, was he the guy in Fast and Furious 2, or is that the guy from Stolen that I always get him confused with?
I don't know. I need to look this up. Cole Hauser, Too Fast, Too Furious. It's Carter Verone. Wow! I didn't even recognize that. So this is a movie in which Cage and Cole Hauser are dispensed down to Colombia to basically follow a shipment of cocaine up to Vancouver.
Right, to see where in the chain the weak link is.
And it seems like everywhere. It seems
just
like
about everywhere.
There's everywhere. It turns out that Lawrence Fishburne is diluting stuff to make some money. It turns out that there are drug mules who get like busted or get, you know, kidnapped or shot or stolen or whatever. Turns out that there are cops down in Mexico that just shoot up drug shipments and they just take them for themselves. Like, everywhere along the line, there is weakness.
Yeah.
And so Cage goes down there and sort of escorts these drugs and, you know, goes from Cartagena to Mexico to Death Valley in Utah.
Yeah, to Canada.
To Canada, to Seattle, to backpack across to Canada. In the end, and we will get to this in big parts, Lawrence Fishburne pushes him off a cliff because he wants to take his chances, quote, I'm going to take my chances with the cartel. Not a good idea. Cage plummets to his death only to somehow survive the fall. It's not like they show like he
miraculously.
Falls.
Miraculously.
Like, they don't show him falling through branches.
No.
They show him landing flat on his back.
Yeah.
In a little bit of snow.
Like, reaching for his cell phone.
And
totally
then he's
fine.
Walking around with crutches. Only to, in the end, after Lawrence Fishburne gets killed.
Yes.
He dies, right?
Yeah, Cage kills him, burns him alive.
Oh, yes, burns him alive and shoots him. Yes. Like, how could I forget? Leslie Bibb shows up to Cage's place of work. Oh, yes, by the way, Cage is the cook. He is a pizzeria owner of some kind.
Pizza party.
Shooting a pizza. He makes a pizza. The best quote is, you guys know pizza parties are more fun than anything. He also sponsors a youth girls soccer team and gives such shade to their coach.
Oh, that was so great.
Where she's like, you know, thank you so much for giving us a new stadium in New Jersey. He's like, the girls love it. He's like, yeah, next time get first place. It's like, what the fuck? What?
Yeah.
And so in the end, Leslie Bibb shows up at his restaurant and she basically says, you know, I realized nothing's going to change. Like, I had you all the way. You're going to keep getting away with this. And she shoots and kills Nicolas Cage to end the movie.
And
she
movie
picks
ends.
Up a bowl of shells and walks out.
Yep.
And that's the movie. And he's somehow in it a lot and not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of is, for a while, Lawrence Fishburne's movie. And I don't want to use the phrase going full Cage, because I feel like that's a shortcut and lazy and clickbaity. But, like, that's what he's doing. He's in the Cage part here.
This is a level of Fishburne that I didn't know was possible, except maybe, now that I think about it, rewatching John Wick 3 as the Bowery King, he gets a little bit of this in that performance.
Like, if these weren't acting roles, I would be concerned about his mental health, because he is going crazy in his last few movies.
Part of it could be how relaxed he might feel around Cage to try something like
this. Well, you
remember
he was in 2 Uncle Francis movies with him.
That's true. You know, like, they are pals, or they've acted together before. I mean, never quite on this level or anything like this much together, but like, I think maybe he just feels like this is a project where he could just go for it. Hey, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, aside from you and me, who else is really going to see this movie?
As of the time that I logged it on Letterboxd, you had already logged it, but there were a total of 71 other people who had seen this.
Oh, that's more than I thought.
I guess. I mean, I don't know, man. This is apparently based on a true story.
No,
the director
okay.
is a former Navy SEAL. I got inspired by true events.
Let me just say, I got into this with roommate, where it's like, this is inspired by true events in the sense that, like, drugs are made in South America and they get smuggled up north, like, into North America. Like, that's what this is based off of.
So I saw this past weekend, I saw an experimental play with my friend Bob, who is on Tub Talk. Go listen to Tub Talk. We have, like, 11 episodes out. And he and I went to see this play in New York that is loosely adapted from, or loosely inspired by, Don DeLillo's novel White Noise. And what this play is a 70-minute monologue where this guy is basically just reciting lists. And it is one of the most impressive things I've ever seen, and I could not connect with it even a little bit.
Really? And you have all the lists?
I love lists, and it was strange, man. And Bob loved it, and I felt bad that the ticket was wildly expensive, and I only went because his girlfriend couldn't go. And I felt bad that it should have been someone else in my seat, but I admired it. But we were talking about how, like, it's inspired by that book, I guess, kind of like, oh yeah, I know that there's, like, you know, we're watching the Mets game, I'm inspired by this Mets game to write a story about drugs. It's just like, well, it doesn't have anything, you know what I mean? But it's just like,
or
you
just
can be inspired,
like,
by anything.
Yeah, like this, or like this movie about baseball I wrote because I was at a baseball game and it gave me, like, the idea of, like, oh, a movie about baseball.
Inspired by true events. Yeah, baseball's a thing.
Drug cartels are a thing.
R.I.P. Sculling.
R.I.P. Sculling, indeed. More Cage Nexions.
You know, I kind of want to do, I don't know which way to do, so I want to
do Cage. You want to do Cage Nexions first? Because I got a couple.
Go for it.
Saturn Films.
Also, Patriot Films, which is like his fourth time he's worked with them, which I have never seen that title card before, and he's done four movies
with
them.
It's just like a slush fund kind of thing going on with that. Cage and Glasses.
Cage Shaving.
Cage Shaving is a big, big, and Cage Dying, but dying twice. I don't think he's ever died twice. It was presumed dead and then came back.
So he dies in Deadfall, and then that character comes back
in another
Arsenal,
movie,
but
and dies again.
Yeah.
Unclear.
I also do want to say that because he's an Italian chef, he gave me shades of Moonstruck.
Right.
Because he enters work into Italian music, and he puts on his thing, and he's, like, tossing a pizza around. It's kind of like Suicide Squad in that everyone has, like, a title card.
Oh, dude.
And they have a freeze frame where the name comes up, and he tosses the pizza up and catches it on his hand. As soon as he touches his hand, goes, the cook.
There's so many touches to this movie that put it over the edge for me to the point where it's incredible. Like, it's an incredibly amazing movie as far as I'm concerned in the way that it has been put together. There's, like, those amazing freeze frame title cards, like you mentioned.
Yes.
There are also, like, all the different location title cards, like, within the first, like, 15 minutes, we're like, spanned half the globe. And I don't know if you caught this, but, like, the movie just kind of fades in and out. All the fucking time.
I saw this as, like, we want to be like Traffic. Like, this is going to be a global story.
Right.
And also we want to be like Indiana Jones with a map that, like, shows a dotted
line
going from one place.
Like, that put me over the top. When the first time the map showed up, Clifton Collins Jr. is walking like maybe 5 paces on the map and it vanishes. And then it comes up again and I was like, oh, thank God they're bringing the map back. And it's on a little longer every time. And then eventually, like, a boat is taken and then a plane, like, That map fucking slayed me.
I am firmly of the belief that they should screen this movie in business classes, because this movie is so concerned with showing you the rising value of a kilo of cocaine with every hand that touches it, every bit of work that Cage has to do to keep it safe. It starts out when they pick the cocoa leaves down in Colombia or wherever.
Yeah, on Clifton's farm.
Yes, and they school-age children that the mother takes out of school to, like, go pick drugs. It starts out at $1,000 a kilo, and then when it gets to Canada, it's like $34,000 a kilo.
Yep.
It's so concerned with proving, look at the economics of cocaine. It's like, I don't care. I don't care.
But I think what they were trying to do with that, and I don't think it worked, is like, here's why.
Oh, very little about this movie works, but it also works.
But like, here's why the price goes up so much, right? And it's like, oh, this is going to be real interesting. Like, are they going to double it when they cut it? And like, are they going to mix it? And like, are they going to expand it into like twice as? No. Like, basically, it's just, it crosses a border and it becomes $10,000 more expensive to like buy this stuff. Or like, maybe once or twice it changed hands and then it became like an extra $5,000. Yeah. But like, there was never any. We find out the issue is with Lawrence Fishburne, which is basically at the end of the line. Where
so
he's
basically, if the drugs get there, so the movie also has a lot of people dying from cocaine, which is why Leslie Bibb gets involved in the first place.
Yeah,
and she's got a crazy backstory because her sister and her brother-in-law or whatever, parents of this young girl, like one of the very first lines in the movie is, "I can't wake them up," and her bus driver's like, "Who are you talking about?" Cut to her parents are dead, overdosing on cocaine, just doing blow in the living room. Like, on separate couch, like, I don't know, it was just weird.
Yeah, on a
it was
school
a weird
night.
Environment. On a school night. And then Leslie Bibb shows up, and then there's other people. So basically, if the cocaine made its way from Colombia to America, like, to Lawrence Fishburne, that's where it got bad. But also, like, you know, we saw in the opening, the truck got shot up. Like, there's problems along the way.
Right.
But the one that is causing the death, because they're cutting it with fentanyl and heroin.
Which, also, if you have fentanyl and heroin, just sell that. You cut cocaine with, like, baby powder or, like, laxative. Not that, I mean, I wouldn't know why or how or anything. But I'm just saying, like, in other movies, when you watch it, it's like, that's what you cut it with. Like, you cut it with lesser stuff. Like, go sell fentanyl if that's what you've got. I don't understand.
It's a very, very weird movie. I knew that we were in for a weird movie when the song over the opening credits, which is basically a flash forward to the end of the movie, has the word motherfucker in it. Like, it's just straight up profane in the theme song. And I'm like, why? What? Why?
So what I loved at the end of this movie is you find out there's a double wraparound. Like, first you get the guy.
And they're both Lawrence Fishburne.
And they're both Lawrence Fishburne. But first you get, you don't know it's him. And I was like, who's this guy? But you get like a naked Lawrence Fishburne taped up and tied
who looks way skinnier than Lawrence Fishburne has looked in like 30
years. That's a body double,
right? Again, not like an insult to Lawrence Fishburne, but he's become a bigger man.
Yeah, I think
and even like back in like The Matrix, he wasn't like thin.
No.
He was in shape then for the Matrix, but like this is like a scrawny has not been fed in 2 weeks body.
Right. And then the next shot is like the journey of the drugs through the nightclub.
Yes.
Where it's like this really
long,
elaborate,
open with like, just here's the cocaine.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, ooh, cocaine, let's go do cocaine.
And then it turns out like that's like his second to last scene or something. So it's like this double reversal wraparound that just blew my mind. Oh, it's like, because you got balls to attempt one wraparound, as we talked about recently on the Radio Flyer episode, where Hanks is just in the beginning and end, and he's telling the whole story and everything like that. So, like, to do a double just is, like, kudos.
Amazing. This is also a movie in which Lawrence Fishburne watches two girls on a bed in a peep show house and jerks off to completion on camera.
And we get his vinegar strokes, and he's just like, oh, Lawrence Fishburne.
So, like, they're just laying there, and, like, they're in their underwear but fully clothed, and then the thing comes down, and he's like, no, 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 and he puts the coins in, and then it comes back up, and, like, one girl's, like, barely not wearing a bra, but they're in the same pose. Like, they're just laying there, not making out, they're just laying in bed, and he stands up and jerks off, and then we fade into another scene.
This also is a movie in which he might get pegged, we're not sure, but like he takes the two prostitutes.
No. He for sure does.
Yes.
Because he says, okay, so after he sees them at the peep show or whatever, he then hires two prostitutes and they show up and they take off their trench coats and one's wearing a strap on.
Yes.
And he says, like, let's take it in the back, like, let's go get the party started. And she says, you're going to take it in the back. And he says, and I quote, he laughs and says, right after, right? can't even say it, right after I'm done setting that pussy on fire. Lawrence Fishburne, what are you doing?
That shot is amazing. It's like almost half a Clockwork Orange shot where, like, you see his face in the foreground.
Oh, my God. This is
and he's,
mastery.
Like, doing all this blow. And behind him, you see all the sex antics going on over, like, 2.5 days.
Yeah, him fucking two women. And getting high.
Yeah, and the best part about all the sex is that, like, they're pretty much fully clothed.
Yes.
Like, during all of the sex acts.
Yeah, I feel like Lawrence Fishburne was like, I will say and do crazy things, but yeah. I'm not getting naked for this movie.
No, I don't think that was him, again, on the bathroom floor, when they, because they also, like, flay a piece of his skin off and feed it to the dog. Did you catch that?
I think so.
At the end there? No, but that was hilarious, man. Like, yeah, Lawrence Fishburne, way to go in this.
What I also want to say is that this is a movie in which Barry Pepper, who is the boss, that is his name.
Yeah.
Actually, let's see if we've
missed
any names.
Which Barry Pepper, people, if you're not aware, he is the main rat brain man animal from Battlefield Earth.
He's also Roger Maris in 61.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yes.
With Thomas Jane as Mickey Mantle.
I forgot about that.
So the names that we've missed so far, Leslie Bibb is the, quote, agent in charge.
The longest name, I think, out of everyone.
Then Cage is the cook. Lawrence Fishburne is the man. Barry Pepper is the boss, and we see him, we're introduced to him as he's making creme brulee, and I'm like, is this a restaurant-based crime syndicate? Like, what? Like, I understand that probably restaurants are kind of a front for drugs, but, like, they're both, like, into cooking. Like, it's not like they're just, like, running a restaurant, like, as a front. They're like, oh, no, we're chefs.
I thought of that, too. I was like, why is Cage the cook? I thought he was going to actually cook the, like, I thought he was the Walter White. Like,
yeah,
he was the cook. But
he's just a guy, also, with a very pregnant wife.
Oh, yeah, very attractive blonde woman that finds him irresistible.
Who's, like, 30 years his junior.
Yeah. Yeah, that was funny.
Clifton Collins Jr. is the farmer.
Mm-hmm. Love that guy.
Peter Facinelli plays, like, Leslie Bibb's partner. Yeah. So he introduces, and he's just like, so, yo, we got a call, and, like, this is literally his first line in the movie, and Leslie Bibb's already, like, hands up, like, let's keep it going, like, come on, like, what are you saying? It's just like, just started talking. Yeah. How are you exasperated already?
That's her character, though. Her character is like, why is this, the world is moving twice as slow as I am. Like, everyone needs to speed up. Like, this is craziness.
Let's talk about, for a minute, how I thought she was a crooked cop, and then it just seems like she's a cop who plays by her own rules.
So, like, I thought at the end, when she came in to talk to Cage, it was going to be like, ha, like, we did it.
Yeah.
We sure got one over on my partner and got those drugs through. But then I thought she was going to be like, but my sister died because of it, so you're going to die. But no, none of that. It was just like...
So this is what it did. This is what made no sense to me. So she is interrogating... So Peter Facinelli... Adam Goldberg.
Yeah, Adam Goldberg, the snitch.
The snitch.
Which he gets the last title card.
Comes to Lawrence Fishburne's house, because apparently the man had said, come over, I got girls, I got drugs, let's have a party.
Yeah.
He shows up, he goes in the room, they're both dead.
Yeah.
One's maybe not dead, but they're basically both dead. And so Lawrence Fishburne's like, oh, fuck, I'm bezooted, actual word he says, I'm late for my daughter's piano recital.
Yeah.
I need to go there, you can handle this, right? And he's like, no, fuck you. He does anyway, but his way of handling it is to drive these two girls in the front seat of his station wagon to the police station.
No, to the hospital, the emergency
room. With paramedics standing outside, a police car with two cops in it stationed across the street, in clear visibility,
like,
of the window, is just, like, putting coke on his keys and, like, doing lines in the open window as he props up the dead prostitute's head.
Yeah.
And then the lady cop is just like, you see this shit? And they go over and they arrest him. They bring him inside. And so this is where Leslie Bibb gets crazy. And so and not like in a crazy person sense, but just like, I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah, we'll get there.
So they have this guy dead to rights. It's possession. It's drug use. It's murder or manslaughter.
Right.
It's intent to distribute. It's all this different stuff.
And they can get everyone they need through him, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so she says, all right, you're free to go. And her partner, Peter Facinelli, is just like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And they go in the hallway. And she takes a phone call, don't know who it's with.
Never find out.
That is a thread that is never answered.
It's like the Judicator thing at John Wick, where it's just like the power of a phone call.
I guess so. And so she gives the phone to him. They let the guy go. He comes outside and she waves to him and he gets in her car. I was like, oh, she's in on it.
Yeah.
But, like, it's also so obvious. Like, she's literally outside the police station. It wouldn't make sense for her to pick up a criminal. And I don't know why he gets in her car, because then she takes him to an empty warehouse, strings him up and tortures him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, straight up Gitmo shit, like death metal blasting in headphones. Like, what is happening?
Yeah, like naked, like strung up with his arms over his head on a chain style, like left for days with no pot to piss in, basically. You're right, like insanity, like Zero Dark Thirty.
And so she comes back, and then that's when we see his name say the snitch. And that's when we're like, oh, okay, so he's going to be the rat here. And then she just tries to, like, she figures everything out. Like, she's a cop on the level of, like, Timothy Oliphant and Delroy Lindo from Gone in 60 Seconds,
Too good for this movie.
She's like, I know all the players. I know where they're going to be. She's at the airport at the right time. She's just on the wrong side of the fence. The cops don't let her through for some reason.
Right, because they're in Canada. Yeah.
Like, she knows everything everyone is doing. And she still can't stop anyone. So I guess just in the end, because she plays by her own rules, she kills Cage.
Yeah,
but like,
it's a
real
true detective ending to this.
Who does she call? We don't know.
Never find out.
And why does Adam Goldberg get in her car? We don't know.
Never know. I wish I could, like, A, have answers, or B, argue some kind of alternate point to this, but I am right there with you, man. And this is part of the reason why I loved it, because I realized, like, the scene or two later, I'm like, we never find out who's on the other end of that phone, and she never pulls that phone call bullshit again. And, like, we don't see her. I don't think we see her south of the border, but we see her partner try and trace Cage and all that. And, like, they don't know that Cage is in league with Fishburne and all that or anything else. Like, it doesn't even seem like they're on the same page as cops. Like, they're doing their own thing.
No, but it feels like if they just had, like, a little bit of time, they would have figured everything out. Like, they're good at their job. It's just...
No, if they had just done due process with Adam Goldberg's character, they could have gotten Lawrence Fishburne, and then they could have gotten Barry Pepper and Cage. You know what I'm saying? They could have... There's a chain of command they could have followed up.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, because of the true events that this movie's based on, this stuff actually happened, had to be in the movie.
So when Cage is down in Colombia or Mexico, he speaks some of the worst Spanish I've ever heard.
Oh my God. Has he ever tried to speak a foreign... maybe Captain Corelli's mandolin.
He probably speaks a little Italian from his family. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
but
this is like
botched.
This is like sixth grade broken Spanish.
Yeah, and he's talking to Clifton Collins, who looks at him, and you could kind of see this look on his face like, really? Like, that's...
This is the take we're using? All right. Because, like, Clifton Collins is like he's one of those very creepy that guys. Just like, oh.
Westworld.
Like, when he shows up, it's just like, oh, he's scary. Like, just the way
he
looks.
You know he was in that Shia War movie? Was it Man Down when he was the bum?
Yeah. Speaking of that guy, there is also one leg of the trip is, like, there's that overweight cowboy guy, right? Who, like, escorts the cocaine for a while. Like,
the trucker?
Yeah, it's like... Luis Guzman wasn't available, so let's get this guy.
Oh my God, if Luis Guzman was in this movie, it would have broken my mind.
It's just, it's very strange. And then he goes to a Mexican strip club and hires a woman to be a prostitute. And she's like beautiful. And then she's like, oh yeah, I'll call you. Like, but she seems like into him, but just because he gave her like a stack and also gave her blow.
Well, it seems like they use this guy a lot, right? And... it turns out, like, doesn't it, like, someone ends up stealing from someone else. But there's something ends up happening with this guy that they end up having to kill him, right? Like, was it him? Or no, it's the other guy that shows up at the dinner party. Okay, I remember what happens now. So this guy is, like, one of their regular runners. And he shows up at the strip club and they're like, hey, welcome back. And he's like, yeah, I come here often, this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then he hands all the kilos off to the other guy.
It's the backpacker.
The backpacker who gets one stolen.
At the club.
Yeah.
And
then
they bring
up
in him and they bring
house.
In the guy who stole it somehow.
Yeah. And they get killed off.
Yeah.
Okay, so the trucker guy survives.
Yes.
I wasn't sure.
Hold on. So, okay. So there is...
that backpack he's walking around.
So there's a scene where the backpacker... So he's in another club, and the cocaine gets stolen. He loses a brick.
A whole kilo,
The guy's just like, fuck you, I'm leaving. And so we then see the backpacker go to lower on the tier cartel drug lord down in Mexico.
The next stop, right.
And he is invited over for dinner, and this guy goes and gets, like, mole sauce and, like, squirts a bunch on. The guy's like, hey, that's enough. Then takes a big old knife and just slits the guy's throat, then uses that same knife to cut his steak and eat it. And I was like, whoa. And then from the room behind, Cage and Cole Hauser come out, and you see the guy who had stolen, like, strung up and murdered.
Yeah.
And they have all the drugs
again. Scarface style.
But it's, I mean, I understand that the drug trade is, like, troubling and stuff, but, like, this is crazy. Like, this is like every step is a problem. Like, there's a step where there's a routine traffic stop by cops.
Oh, that's my favorite.
And two other guys that we don't know come up and kill the cops and take their clothes and then
pose as cops.
Pose as cops.
Stop the trucker guy.
And then the trucker guy gets stopped, and then Cage and Cole Hauser show up and they kill the new guys, and they're like, all right, trucker, go through.
It was perfect timing too. Like, they pull up and hit him with the car right when they're trying to open the door. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there aren't any weak links along the way. Because it goes by truck. First it goes by foot. The coke goes by foot. Then it goes by a truck. Then it goes by a boat. Then it goes by a plane. Oh, that's my favorite part. So they fly
Death Valley.
They fly it, no problem, into America. Like, over all of California.
So I have a crazy thing about this. I want to see if it's okay. You're going to say. Okay. Go ahead.
No, probably not, because what I'm going to do is step off is one of my favorite moments is when Cage is just camping in Death Valley,
yes,
waiting and
hunting animals and skinning them.
Yeah, you know, just like camping out there waiting for this plane to come, and then a guy skydives out of the plane with the coke backpack and lands like right next to him.
I thought he was there to like have like a dead drop, like he was going to drop the bags out and they were going to go get them.
Yeah,
and then the guy skydives out and I'm like, why? What?
Why?
I guess.
Why not land the plane?
In retrospect, well, because I guess you probably can't land because then you have to have like regulation or whatever. I don't know.
Gonna tip them off.
I don't know.
Is that?
But I think in retrospect, I think that guy was always the chain in, like, he's the link in the chain there.
Yeah.
And so if Cage wasn't there to make sure, that guy's gonna parachute or skydive down into the
Death Valley, get somewhere else.
Bring it to Seattle easily enough. And then pass it off up there, and it's going to go from whoever. But then at the end, when it gets to Seattle, then Cage and Lawrence Fishburne just backpack it across and, you know, cross-country ski.
So there's two things. Like, that's what's so weird is, like, that they didn't have people at every stop to begin with to make sure that this problem was...
I think there were, but they just, like, it was like one guy. There's
just
no backup
kept getting
plan.
Yeah. The second thing is we find out that none of the transportation stuff is really the problem. What's really the problem is when Lawrence Fishburne gets in and starts cutting it, because that's what's killing people.
Yeah.
The other thing
is... it's light getting there, but it's like that's the death. The death is there.
Yeah. And the other thing is, was it Cage's job to always backpack it over Canada, and this time he just, or was it Lawrence, like, did Cage and Lawrence Fishburne, was their deal always,
I don't know.
Were they always the guys who did that in that link?
I don't think so, because when Cage is with his wife, and she's like, are you going somewhere down south? He's like, you know, basically, you know, I can't talk about that. She's like, I hate it when you do that. She's not saying, are you going up north? It's like, are you going
down south? You've gone down south before, because the other thing is, like, you know, Adam Goldberg is set up and everything, and he's being followed, and Lawrence Fishburne, like, tries to play it off like he doesn't know that and stuff. But Cage ends up shooting Adam Goldberg to death on the side of the road. And then they call that guy because they have a problem, and they find the tracker, and they switch cars and everything.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to figure out, like, what is Cage's job as the cook in this whole cartel? I understand, like, it gets to him in Seattle, and then he gives it to Lawrence Fishburne, but, like, I don't understand.
I feel like he's
a
dealer that supplies the dealers. Maybe he's a dealer that supplies the dealers who supply the dealers.
All right.
But it also feels like, no, because maybe Lawrence Fishburne is just like, because he's the one actually cutting it and putting the little baggies, right?
Yeah.
So he's like the street level dealer.
Right.
Cage is above him and Barry Pepper's above him.
Okay.
I guess.
All right.
Lawrence Fishburne then hires another prostitute that he then brings who, like, kind of looks like his daughter a little bit.
His real-life daughter?
Yeah. A little bit. And then they go to the motel and he tries to, like, he pays for the room for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But then is talking to, like, this, like, probably 50 or 60-year-old receptionist, like, hey, a little something extra if you want to join us. She's like, I would need more than 20 minutes. He's like, I got no problem with that. It's like, what? I don't.
Again, going full Fishburne.
And then that's when Leslie Bibb, you know, gets him to confess. And then he and Adam Goldberg in on it. I don't know what Lawrence Fishburne's end goal is, though, right? Because it's like, he wants to take his chances with the cartel. Like, is he just trying to make a power play and he's going to take Cage's role?
I think it's all sort of like, I think he's off book. I think he's just trying to stay alive. And I think part of it is, like, if there's an opportunity here to screw over anyone just to save myself, I'm going to do it, right? So the whole Adam Goldberg situation is like, I don't know anything about that, right? He's like, trying to always self-preservation. So the whole Cage thing, when Cage is hanging off the side of the mountain, he's like, hey, friend, like, help me, pull me up, buddy. He's just like, you know, I can't do that. Like, there's just not in the cars, man. Like, you know, I just feel like it was an instant decision where it's like,
I'm going to take my chances with the cartel. Where does it stop? Sorry, bro. And then he basically pulls a scar on Mufasa.
Over goes Cage, and I screamed. I was like, no, we killed him.
Then we have Lawrence Fishburne taking a bath, and then having, like, a makeover montage where he goes and buys a new suit.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how we get back to the beginning of the movie.
You know what that reminded me of? What was... Always Be My Maybe, when he goes in to buy the suit and he's like, that'll be like $17,000. And he's like, shit. Because he wanted the one Keanu had or whatever.
Then he's like, you know, he thinks he's king shit and like he's smoking a cigar in the club. And the bouncer comes and puts it out and then brings it up to Barry Pepper's office. And he's trying to smoke another cigar up there. And Barry Pepper's like, come on, guy, like, act the part.
Because they know that he tried to kill Cage and that Cage is...
because Cage is still alive.
Yeah, they're keeping him behind locked door, behind door number three, behind the third curtain.
Bachelor number three. Then we find out at the end that Cage is alive.
That's amazing.
And Lawrence Christian's like, I watched you die.
And Cage gives that great sort of... He has a great Cage moment at the end there. By the way, throughout this entire movie, Cage is doing his, what I like to call, like, his screw face, where he's doing, like, a mean... He's trying to do, like, a mean look, almost, like, the entire time. Like, something just bugs him, like, about all of this.
And I feel like he's the kind of guy, like, in this world that he retired from the game, and he doesn't want to be doing this anymore.
Yeah, he just wants to make his pizzas.
He just wants to make his pizzas and, you know, donate to a soccer team and just, like... be so mean to the coach, and then because he has to come back into this world, he's just like, God damn it. And I think that's just like, he doesn't know who he's pissed at. I don't know if he suspects Lawrence Fishburne at the beginning, but by the end, he hates him because, like, if it wasn't for him doing his bullshit, he would just be making pizzas. And also, alive at the end of the movie. Leslie Bibb at the end just smokes, pulls out a cigarette and starts smoking in his kitchen. She says, please don't smoke in my kitchen. And then she's talking about the futility of it all. And she's like, it's like one giant self-licking ice cream cone. And I was like, I don't know what that means. So she's like basically saying, no matter what I do, no matter who I stop, no matter what efforts I make, this is never ending, right? It's like, no matter what happens, this is a problem. She shoots and kills Cage, walks out, credits start to roll. Then we have a credit scene where Clifton Collins starts it over again.
That's right, like over and over again.
But like, she just said that. Why are we seeing it? She just said that. Like, we don't need that.
Because just so you know, like, killing Cage isn't going to do anything either.
Yeah, but I think she knew that. She's just like, she's just basically, I need to do something.
It's the movie trying to be like, you know, trying to make its point one more time at the end there, trying to be prolific.
Yeah, it's like, we get it. We know.
So Cage, he pulls off the hood and he's standing there and Lawrence Fishburne thought he was dead. Cage goes to Lawrence Fishburne, you gambled and lost.
I love it.
You gambled and lost. And Crutches Cage is amazing because he's clearly just, like, he's not acting in his crutches. He's just, like, walking in, you know? I don't think he really practiced with crutches.
No.
It would have been better if they just gave him, like, a fake cast or something, like, I don't know, or broke his arm, you know, instead of his legs or something.
Or just put him in a wheelchair.
Oh, my God. It's incredible how little damage he sustained falling off a cliff. Like, freaking, what's his name? Brixton from Hobbs and Shaw, like, he would have died from that fall. Like, it's insane.
I took so many notes, and I think I went through all of them. Is there anything else that we did not talk about that you want to make sure you cover? I'm going to look at one other thing that I wrote down.
I just thought it was hilarious how many locations we visited and were expected to keep track of so early in the movie, where it's like, now we're in Vancouver, now we're in Seattle, now we're in Columbia, now we're over here now, we're over here now.
All that is just like, the movie's like, look how important it is. Look how important the story that we're telling is. Look how globe-spanning it is.
I had two notes. Do you think, I wondered if those were Adam Goldberg's real tattoos, because I just didn't feel like the production, I didn't feel like the production had enough money and time to
cover them,
and B, I figured it, you know, he was exposing them because it was finally a moment where, like, he could wear them on a movie, you know? Like, I could show them in a movie. The other thing is, at one point, Lawrence Fishburne, he, like, comes out of a bodega pissed off and, like, scratching, losing lottery tickets and stuff. And I'm like, you just gave your ex-wife, like, thousands of dollars in $100 bills. Like, why are you, like, sweating over, like, a scratch-off?
I don't know, man.
Like, and then this guy walks around the corner like, you owe me, man. And he's like, hey, I got this for you. And he gives him some coke and stuff. But, like, you're loaded.
Well, what this movie teaches you is that if you ever owe somebody money, just give them cocaine cut with fentanyl and heroin, and then they'll die, and you suddenly won't owe them any money.
Oh, there's that great shot where Leslie Bibb, like, looks down an alleyway, and there's, like, three of the cleanest dead homeless
just bones sitting next to each other, upright, like, against the wall.
Like, they are frozen in like, the wintertime.
It's wonderful. It is truly a special movie.
I mean, look, this is no score to settle. Like, that...
No, that's the thing. So, like, this I did not give a score to on Letterboxd, because a score to settle is, like, That's a miracle. That's a miracle movie.
That's a miracle movie.
This is not a miracle movie. This is just like an insane movie that I just gave this the little heart.
But it's
still,
it's not like it's 2.11. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, no. That's I enjoyed this movie. Like, yeah. Like, I think this is...
I find amazing.
Like, I think Score to Settle is...
It's special.
It's a bad movie, but
no,
it's...
but it's special.
It's special. This is just a bad movie that could, like...
It's got a lot of bonkers things going on.
A lot of the reviews on Letterboxd are like, this is frustrating, I wish that this was this, I wish that it was that. Like, it's like, they got the potential, and I'm just like...
All the things I love about it.
You gotta know what you're dealing with here. Like, it's not gonna be good. The fact is, like, how do they all... Like, why are they all here? I don't understand it.
There's more, like... I don't want to say there's, like, merit to this more than, like, something like 2.11, but there's definitely levels. You know what I'm saying? I feel like there's three scores when dealing with the VOD.
Three scores to settle.
There's the bottom, which is like the 2.11
and
stuff,
Arsenal, yeah.
Where it's just like, this is just bad, and it's just bad, and there's really nothing like to redeem here.
I'm gonna say there's four tiers, but go
ahead. The second one is something like this, where it's like acceptable, right? Oh, you're right, there are four.
And there's like Looking Glass is another one of those, but I think Looking Glass is sort of this one, and then think of the one above, where it's just like, this is not good, but like, it's fun.
Yeah. Then there's the Hungry Rabbit Jumps, where there's like genuinely good video on demand.
Oh, I was saying that was the top tier.
Well, no, that is. I'm just saying there's four. That is the top tier.
Yes.
But the other one I was talking about are these madness, like
A Score to Settle
is like best of the worst, like balls to the walls. Like, how did this even happen? Like,
yeah. In terms of going from like watchability, like the worst is like 2.11. Just like nothing is working here.
Yeah.
Then there's the one that's like this, where it's like there's some fun stuff, but it just doesn't work.
It's not bad per se, it's just not working.
Then above that is A Score to Settle. It's maybe Looking Glass. It's the one that's just like, this isn't good, but they are swinging for the fences, and they are missing every pitch here.
I'd say it's when someone else in the movie is going full cage and taking it almost like taking it away from him at times, and there's like this battle. And I forgot Nicole Kidman was in Looking Glass too. No,
that's not Looking Glass. That you're talking about. Oh God, what's it called?
Oh, you're right. Not Looking Glass. That's the one with the motel. I'm
Looking Glass
about
is the Robert
with
the motel
with the diamonds.
Oh God, what's that movie called?
All you have to do is open that door right there, and you'll see every Cage movie.
I don't want to look
Trespass.
It up.
Trespass.
Trespass.
I got that confused. But
you did it! You cracked the code!
The money's in the walls.
Yeah, but then there's the top tier, which is the Stolen, which is Seeking Justice, which is like, this is actually like a good movie that could be in theaters and just wasn't in theaters for some reason.
Oh, the one OBL, where he goes after Osama.
Yeah, oh yeah, Army of One.
Army
of
One. Yeah.
Yeah, there's the four tiers, and you know, as long as it's not in the bottom one, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Me too. I might have been a little overzealous watching it this time, but I was in a good mood and I was very excited. Anytime there's new Cage now, I get very excited.
My concern, when you were like, so you gave it 5 stars on Letterboxd, and you were like, all I got to say is that I'm happy. And I was just like, huh. And then I was watching, I was like, I'm having a good time. But I also, like, there were a couple times where I was like, I got to be like halfway through. And it was like 20 minutes in. I was like, what is happening? There's an hour 20 left.
Yeah.
And then again, I was just like, oh, I got to have, like, there's got to be, like, the last half hour. It's, like, halfway through. It's, like, oh, my God. Like, what is happening? But anyway, when you said tonight that it's not A Score to Settle, like, that's all that I need. Like, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, we're pretty much in sync with a lot of these Cage movies where it's, like, we know what's good. We know what's bad. We know what's fun. And as long as you weren't, like, this is as good as A Score to Settle, because, like, that is truly...
I'm aware.
What is happening in that movie?
Yeah, I can't believe I figured that one out. I'm almost a little sad that I didn't get the full reveal of A Score to Settle, but I still think back on that, and it's in a different class, for sure.
Anything else to say about this before? You know, we're going to be back in probably three weeks for Kill Chain.
I know. Kill Chain, maybe Colorado Space later this year, maybe.
I hope so. That's getting rave reviews at a Fantastic Fest.
Oh, there was one point where they did a split screen map. Was it Cage's face on one side of the screen and then the map on the other side? Or it might have been Fishburne. I'm not sure exactly who, but I thought that was pretty funny. The Not Dead Junkies.
You know how, like, when you watch Sin City, you're like, Tarantino directed one of these scenes. Which scene did he direct? It's like, oh, it's clearly the scene didn't direct by Tarantino. Brian De Palma directed one of these scenes. Which one is it? Oh, it's the one with the split screen. The craziness happening on both sides.
I think I'm kind of exhausted here for Score to Settle. I love that... you know, I had this weird feeling. I was like, when Cage died, I didn't necessarily think he was alive, but I didn't feel like he was totally out of the movie. Like, maybe
I feel like modern day, you can't just kill him because...
But it kind of made sense in the moment where I was like, oh, I expect this movie to just kill him off here.
Because also, he's top billed, but it's not his movie. It's Lawrence Fishburne's movie.
It's Fish's movie, yeah. And if it isn't, he steals it away for sure, but... No, man, this is just another, again, yeah, I know what I saw. Like, I'm casting no illusions as to its greatness or anything. I was just, you know, very satisfied again.
So according to IMDb, we have Color Out of Space. Obviously, right now it's 2019, but that's because it's in festivals. Mm-hmm. Maybe it comes out, maybe it doesn't come out. We got Kill Chain that we know is coming out in October, October 15th or something. And then also slated for this year, November 8th, Primal.
Yes, finally.
Which is him on the boat with all the animals.
Nice.
And a long time ago.
Maybe there's going to be like a Roar sort of feel to that one.
A long, long time ago, one of the actors in that movie, Tommy Walker, said he would act. He would do the podcast with us. I don't know if that's still going to happen because he's in a couple other movies. Oh, so in that movie, oh my God, in Primal, there's Nicolas Cage, there's Famke Janssen, there's Kevin Durand, a.k.a. Kimi from Lost, and there's Michael Imperioli from The Sopranos.
Oh my God. What the fuck?
I don't know, man. It's going to be good. And then
Christopher. Dude, Christopher and Cage in the same movie?
Kill Chain is Nicolas Cage.
Oh, this is going to be great.
Enrico Colatoni, which is Veronica Mars's dad. Ryan Kwanten, who's one of the stars of True Blood. And Annabelle Acosta, who is, I guess, one of the stars of Quantico and Ballers. So.
When does the fight movie with Gorillo come out? What's that one?
Jiu-Jitsu?
Yeah.
It's not dated. So we have 2019 Primal, 2020 Prisoners of the Ghost Land and the Croods 2, then in production, Kill Chain, even though we know that's coming out, Siberia, Jiu-Jitsu, and Grand Isle.
I love that he's got a movie called Siberia coming out.
And then 10-00 is in development.
Uh-oh, 10-00, I'm getting a 211 vibe from that title. But okay, I'm glad. As long as we get one or two more this year, I'll be very happy.
As long as the guy puts out four movies in a year, I'm happy.
Well, I mean, you know.
He did eight last year, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
We're very spoiled. But I'm also very, like, jaded at this moment. I need some Cage for my veins.
I think this is, like, his 90th, maybe, movie. It's somewhere in there.
You gotta do a new count, yeah. Oh, and we should mention, as the time of this recording, tomorrow, Score to Settle will be out on Blu-ray.
Yes, it's going to be at my house tomorrow. So I'm hoping to put this out tomorrow.
Okay.
So I think today, as you're listening to this, well, actually, whenever you listen to this, Score to Settle is out on Blu-ray because I'm not editing this tonight. So tomorrow, go buy a Score to Settle. My favorite part about that movie is that I forgot that I paid for an Amazon rewards point, so I paid $0.
I think I did too.
And it's on the way to my house right now. But yeah, I think that's all we got. I said before, but any other thoughts about this, or are we good to...
Yeah, I think we're good to go. You know, no guest again on this episode, so it might be a little bit shorter and stuff.
Which is fine.
I don't want to say I don't want to, like, subject anybody to this, because that's the contrary. Like, I absolutely want people, like, the object is to get more people to watch these movies and stuff, but it's just tougher to get guests these days for Cage Club, because these movies are not known whatsoever.
Also, I don't really care.
Well, it's a lot of fun just, you know, taking it back to basics with you and doing it like it all started. And there's a certain energy to just these solo bolos, doing it to just us.
So we also tonight recorded an episode of Keanu Club about Between Two Ferns, the movie. So go check out that movie if you like Keanu Reeves or just like comedy. And we also every Friday do the Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks podcast, the Tom Toms, Cruise Club, and Hanks for the Memories. Go check those out every Friday. We are in the midst of great Tom Cruise movies.
Yes.
And we are about to turn the corner on great Tom Hanks movies.
That's right. Unless you consider, like me, Bonfire of the Vanities was the start of the greatness of what is Tom Hanks movies.
We just recorded a radio flyer, need I remind you.
We did a little bump in the
combo
road.
Breaker. Combo breaker.
Combo breaker, nice.
But for all things Cage Club Prime and Cage Club Revisited, we did 50 director's commentaries, which are varying quality, I will just say that right now. You go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, mailbag@cageclub.me. Come back in probably 3 weeks for Kill Chain. Check out all 100 episodes of this. You know, all 25 shows on the network. Lots of fun, free things for you to listen to wherever you get podcasts. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And we'll see you next time right here on Cage Club.